KMXT is supported in part by Henry's Great Alaskan Restaurant, featuring over 20 beers on tap and a selection of varietal wines by the glass or by the bottle. Open Monday through Saturday, starting at 11:30 a.m. and Sundays at noon, downtown on the Mall.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Families enrolled in state-funded homeschool programs in Alaska can use their student funding allotments to pay for some private school classes. That's according to an opinion the State Department of Law released on Monday. Families enrolled in homeschool programs can spend public money on books, school supplies, tutoring, and classes. The state legislature first allowed state-funded homeschool programs to give allotments to families in 2014. In her opinion, Deputy Attorney General Corey Mills said allotments can be used to pay for some private school classes, but not full-time tuition at a private or religious school.
The more it looks like you're just trying to send your kid to private school and get subsidized by the state, I think that's when you start getting into unconstitutional territory.
She said the goal of student funding allotments is to supplement public education, not to replace it with private school. For example, a homeschooled student whose district doesn't offer Latin might take it at a private school. Her opinion outlines what's likely constitutional and likely unconstitutional.
Things like private tutoring, public or private college courses, extracurricular classes or sports, certain educational materials that meet the requirements of the allotment program are all very likely constitutional, even if they may provide an incidental benefit to a private school.
Mills also emphasized that there's a lot of gray area when it comes to the constitutionality of allotment spending. She says it's up to individual school districts to work with the Department of Education and Early Development when questions do arise.
Constitutional questions are often murky. We're trying to provide at least the absolute yeses, absolute noes, and then kind of what can you work, what framework can you work within in those gray areas. Ultimately, we just want to try to help school districts and the department best implement this program.
Opponents have argued that the allotment program violates the part of the state constitution that says public funds cannot directly benefit a religious or other private educational institution. But Mills said, on its face, the allotment program isn't unconstitutional. A new report compiled by geotechnical engineers shows Skagway's busiest cruise ship dock is at significant risk for rock slides impacting the dock, moored ships, cruise ship passengers, and workers. At its latest meeting, the Borough Assembly asked the dock's owners, White Pass and Yukon Route, to stop using the portion of the dock in the active slide area. But the next day, municipal officials agreed to rearrange passenger foot traffic to try and reduce risk. KHNS's Mike Swayze spoke with the Skagway Assemblyperson Reba Hilton about the report and the new pedestrian traffic flow agreement.
Assemblyperson Reba Hilton, thanks for joining us. Let's jump right into the big news coming from the rock slide area right above Skagway's busiest cruise ship dock, the railroad dock. The municipality brought in scientists to study the slide area. They released a report this week. What did that report say?
Here's one quote that got everyone's attention. It is our opinion that the slope conditions observed during our site visit display significant hazards to people and structures below the slope. That's scary, right? I used to work down there. I have friends that work down there. I have a family member that works down there.
I work down there, 4 or 5 days a week, and I look up at that giant rock that's perched and has been moving at a couple of inches a year now, ready to come down at any time, and I think, what's my best escape route? That's what I think when I'm down there. It's incredibly frightening.
Absolutely. And when they first started monitoring this, it was moving at the tune of 1 and 1.5 inches a year. And now this new report release said it's moving to 2.5 inches per year. So historically, we don't have more data than a few years old, unfortunately. But I mean, you hear those facts and it's pretty frightening.
Now, White Pass is claiming that the rocks that could cause damage on the railroad dock are coming from municipal land. So they're municipal property. How did the assembly respond to that?
Whew, man, it was hard. It was a 4-hour meeting. This was the hot topic. Basically, everyone is liable. We all know what's going on down there, and we are putting not only ourselves at risk, but we're putting all of our guests that come into this port that are docked on that side in risk, and it's unacceptable.
And so then the assembly said, well, let's ask White Pass to stop using the area next to the biggest slide and then tender people from the aft position. You had a meeting with municipal officials and with White Pass on Friday morning. What sort of agreement did you come up with?
What we did is we looked where there's most of the congestion with people congregating in the most dangerous spots down there. That's right below the rock slide where failure is going to happen at some point. So we've come up with a plan together to basically rearrange the flow of traffic down there. And it's going to be hard for people to wrap their head around it. It's late in the season, but we have to make changes because we know the risk now. It's on paper and it's eye-opening, and we had to do something about it.
And what are the changes going to look like?
The security area where people get back onto their ship will be moved further south. The whole area where the coffee shop is and where the shore excursion booths are, that will be moved, not the caboose itself. I believe the caboose will be closed down. M&M will be closed down. That circular turnaround will not be available to anyone but Smart Bus, but even Smart Bus will be loading further north, just north of the restrooms down there. And so Smart Bus will be using the turnaround area, but we're going to make that turnaround area smaller because we're going to open up to allow the flow of people to not bottleneck so much, but just to get them out of that area, and everyone will be meeting further north of the restrooms that are down there on the pier, which is also going to close off the parking lot to the small boat harbor, just the ones that actually line the boardwalk there.
And when do these new developments go into effect?
Immediately.
Assemblyperson Rebecca Hilton, thank you for filling us in on the latest at what's happening on the railroad dock. I appreciate it.
You betcha.
Although the days of panic buying toilet paper may be behind us, more than 2 years into the pandemic, grocery store product shortages are still a part of life. Today, grocers have a difficult time figuring out what products will go missing and when.
It's hard to walk into a grocery store these days without thinking about the buzz phrase, supply chain issues. The common sight of scattered empty shelves is the product of global supply systems that were shattered by the pandemic, and even more recently, by the war in Ukraine. Reported national shortages include meat, canned goods, coffee, and wine. On the Kenai Peninsula, many grocers agree that it's hard to predict which items will be unavailable during any given week.
1 week it's like Jimmy Dean sausage, next week it's paper products. I mean, it's just been so random lately.
That's Jim Kalb, the marketing director at Alaska-based chain Three Bears. He says the shortages come in strange waves. 1 week it will be tampons and pads, and the next, frozen pizzas. Lately, it hasn't been so bad. The only products Kalb says he's missing at the moment are frozen items. Those erratic shortages hit many small grocery stores even harder. At Cooper Landing Grocery and Hardware, owner Wayne Mitchell says 25% of everything he orders just never shows up. That's particularly true for items that come from overseas, like souvenirs.
It runs a whole gamut from cigarettes to candy to souvenirs to anything, just almost anything. I'm taking a chance on what I order.
Souvenirs are especially important at the Cooper Landing store, which serves a lot of tourists in the summer. Mitchell says the store has basic items available most of the time, but placing orders has become difficult and inconsistent. Last year, he says, he only had to go through one vendor to get items. But with a lack of supplies, he's had to diversify. Now, he has to go through 3 or 4 different vendors to get what he needs. That's made purchasing for the store a major time commitment.
I'm working on orders almost constantly, trying to get stuff in here. So it's been a challenge.
Those challenges resonate with Jenny Bushnell, the Kenai manager of the small chain Save You More. She says the seasoning liquid smoke and toilet paper are recent culprits. She also says product shortages are accompanied by sky-high shipping rates.
Say a pallet cost me $1,000. Well, I would pay, to get it up here, I would pay 20% of that, so it would cost me $1,200 for that stuff to get here. Now, if the pallet costs $1,000, it's 40% added on, so it costs me $1,400 to get the pallet here.
And she says that doesn't even account for the cost of putting the product on a barge, which has to make its way to Anchorage, then down to the store on Kalifornsky Beach Road. For Bushnell, that means she's paying higher costs for those products and changing up Save You More's traditional offerings.
We're sacrificing having to pay the higher cost, and then also we're without product and happen to switch to a different kind or a different size.
Save You More, like the store in Cooper Landing, is serving a primarily tourist customer base this summer. Bushnell says she struggles to meet the needs of customers who are only in town for a short while. By the time she's able to bring in the missing products tourists are looking for, they've already gone back home. Jim Kolb of Three Bears says besides a week without frozen items here or paper products there, Three Bears has, in general, been able to keep its 9 Alaska stores well supplied. He attributes this to a strong buying staff and a willingness to seek out a variety of alternative vendors, something that larger chains are less likely to do. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Alaska has no confirmed cases of monkeypox as of Monday, but state health officials are preparing a response for the disease. According to the Centers for Disease Control, the U.S. has over 3,000 confirmed cases in 45 states. So far, the World Health Organization has declared it a global health emergency as of Saturday.
We're expecting our first case any day now.
That's Alaska State Epidemiologist Joe McLaughlin. McLaughlin says so far 9 Alaskans have been tested for monkeypox and all were negative. 7 have been vaccinated. He says the state currently has enough vaccine doses for just 50 people and only 5 courses of antiviral treatment.
Nationally, there's only a very limited supply of vaccine, and the vaccine has been distributed to states based on their population and based on the at-risk population in particular, as well as the number of cases that have already occurred in that particular state or jurisdiction.
McLaughlin says the federal government is expected to send more vaccine doses to Alaska soon. Once the state sees its first case, additional vaccines and treatment courses are expected to come in fairly quickly, he says. The state will use its existing vaccine distribution network to get doses out to rural areas as needed, McLaughlin says. Currently, vaccines are being prioritized for people with a known exposure to someone who has tested positive for monkeypox. Monkeypox is a viral disease transmitted most often through skin-to-skin contact. It produces fever, aches, and fatigue, plus sometimes a rash resembling pus-filled blisters. McLaughlin says this outbreak has not been particularly deadly, with only 5 deaths reported worldwide.